What's happening, golf junkies? I am Sports Guy Ty, and this is the Tips, Picks, and Preview Show for the Thursday Charlie Hoffman Texas Open. Shallow Cal and I diverged for the first time in 2023 without a single overlap selection on the cards in San Antonio. We try and hit the winner out of picks ranging from 18 to 1 all the way to 125 to 1. Shallow Cal settles up on a bet from the match play, and we reminisce on former podcast favorite Kevin Na and his unforgettable 16 at TPC San Antonio. Don't forget to subscribe and rate the show. Enjoy. Greetings, golf fans, and welcome to the Thursday Charlie Hoffman Texas Open Preview and Tip Show. This is episode 75 of Playing the Tips podcast, and one more week on the beautiful grind. Coming to you from the 313, I am Sports Guy Ty. You can find me on Twitter at Sports Guy Ty. And from Ann Arbor, Michigan, Shallow Cal. Find him on the Twitters at Shallow Cal Golf. Good evening, my friend.
Once the 313. We were once 313 here in Ann Arbor.
That's right. You know what? I totally forgot about that, but we were once 313 back in elementary school days.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly when that changed, but I do remember going from the 313 to the old 734.
That was a big deal too when the area code changed.
Yeah. And now everybody covets that 734. And tries to get out of the 313.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right, what are you drinking tonight, my friend?
Made a quick round trip to Chicago last night and came back today. So, of course, I picked up some Chicago beer. We got the Pipeworks Ninjaverse Unicorn.
Nice. Back on the Ninjaverse Unicorn tip.
Yes, sir. How about yourself?
Very familiar beer for me as well this week, back on the Bat Blue Light, but again, dressed up in the Let's Go Red Wings can. 10 games left in the regular season, so got to support the Wings.
Yes, I don't think we're in the playoffs right now, but hopefully next year we can make that push.
Yeah, seemed pretty clear with those moves at the deadline which way they were headed, but that's okay. All faith and trust in Stevie Eiserman for at least one more season.
Yes, yeah. He's won a few cups, so I think he's got more than one more season in him, but I think after next year, it's gonna get hot.
Yeah, it's time to start producing. Red Wings hadn't been in the playoffs since 2015, so it's about time to show something there. One person I will not be putting my faith and trust in this week is Thursday Charlie Hoffman. However, we would be remiss not to mention the all-time money winner here at the Texas Open. A win, 2 seconds, and a third place. Did suffer his first miscut at the event last year. Shallow Cal, any interest anywhere in the ether for you with Charlie Hoffman this week?
Thursday Charlie Hoffman. No, man. I think we've done our fair share of Thursday Charlie Hoffman betting on this podcast. Unfortunately, I think the sun has set on old Charlie.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but there's just a group of golfers in that like early to mid 40s range, even late 40s, that I just can't bet anymore. Put them out to pasture. They're completely dead to me. And I hate to say it because there's a lot of names on the list that I really like and have won some money on in the past, Thursday Charlie being one of them. I actually was on him here 2 years ago when he finished second place to Spieth, who I believe you were on with the outright.
I was. Mr. Jordan Spieth. 14-1, I believe I had him at.
But in addition to Charlie Hoffman, others whom I can no longer bet. Webb Simpson, dead to me. This one really pains me, but Kevin Kisner, dead to me. And this one, not nearly as painful, but Matt Kuchar, also dead to me.
Oh, Kuch, man, he just played real well at match play.
And you know, that is the one place where I had any semblance of interest left in old man Kuchar was at Austin Country Club in the match play. But no,
I got nothing for old Cooch.
Speaking of Kuchar and match play, I think I owe you a round of golf, huh?
You do owe me a round of golf, so we'll do a quick post-mortem on the match play before we move on to the Texas Open.
Damn! I hate paying for golf, and I hate paying for two rounds more than I hate paying for one round.
And, you know, I almost feel bad taking this money and taking this round of golf because it was not a particularly good showing from either one of us.
Oh, it was brutal. That was a weird. It was much, very much like March Madness this year. And I was afraid that we were going to have a really shitty Final Four. But luckily the Final Four was good. So we
great
got
golf, just poor picks on both of our part for the Final Four. One picks. Yep, one golfer for you advances to the semis, Scottie Scheffler. One golfer for me advances to the semis, Cameron Young. Other than that, I think we each had about three or four make it out of group play. Obviously, from there, wasn't going to be a whole lot better other than our semifinalists through the round of 16 and round of 8. So when it all wound up shaking down, 200 points total for me in the bracket. I did have Cam Young winning the match play. He advanced to the championship, which was more or less the difference in our brackets. 110 points for you. Scottie Scheffler advancing to the finals would have made it 190 points on your part, brought us within 10 points, and then it truly would have been Cam Young or Scottie Scheffler for the round of golf. But as is, I come out on top with a robust 200 points in the match play bracket. Anything by way of bets for you that returned at match play?
No, because I only took Scottie Scheffler and John Rahm, and my Scottie Scheffler was win only because he was 8-1. So, not gonna put the each way on an 8-1 bet.
Yeah, this one was difficult for me because, unfortunately, I mean, I'll give myself a little pat on the back for Cam Young as the champion, but I only had an outright ticket on him, no each way. So despite the fact that he made it all the way through pool play, knockout stage, to the final round at 33-1, that returns as much money for me as my Brian Harman bet, who did not make it out of pool play.
You know, this kid's going to win, though. That's a good pick by you with the Paul Tesori storyline. And I wasn't sure if his putter was going to be consistent enough. And I think that's kind of what I don't think that's what did him in because I think he just ran into Burns, who was just so hot. This guy's going to win some major tournaments this year for sure. He is a stud.
Yeah, really what happened was he did miss a couple of those short putts early in the match with Sam Burns, and once that momentum flipped, he was just on his heels playing from behind the entire time. Made a few putts in the holes after that, but it just wasn't enough. Once Burns kind of took that lead, seized momentum, by the time it got to the back nine, he was just running away with it. And as we were talking about just before the show, Sam Burns, stone cold killer. When he's got a win in his sights. Pretty impressive for his fifth win on tour.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. Lots more good days ahead for Cam Young. Hopefully we're on the bandwagon for a couple of those because I do think that first win is coming this year with Paul Tesori on the bag.
Boy, it better because I'm going to lose a fuck ton of money if it doesn't. Betting on it.
You better start returning some of that money.
You know, I think I got a few free bets since I hit the place on the each way in the open when he was 125-1. So I've got a few more free bullets in the chamber right now with the Cam Young bets, but I would like to see another return here soon.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, that eagle on 18 at the open almost gave you a bit more than that each way return. Pretty impressive stuff.
Yeah, well, I had Cam Smith either way, so I was hitting it outright no matter what.
And I was actually on Rory, so we had the top three covered up and down at the Open this past year.
Sure did.
We cannot forget Kevin Na here in 2011 at the Texas Open.
Did you go back and watch it?
Of course I did. I mean, I was trying to remember what year it was, so I Googled Kevin Na 16, and the first thing that popped up was video of it. I had to go back and watch that masterpiece.
Majestic piece of golf right there.
Truly, truly one of us with that performance.
No, I have never carded a 16 in my day. Never. Never.
You picked up a few balls that could have been a 16.
Maybe. There was alcohol involved, though.
All right. By way of a quick agenda, tournament preview, course overview, as we do each and every week, stats to consider, and the weather. We'll get to tips, picks, and best bets from there. But first, Shallow Cal, what do we need from the people?
What do we need from you guys? Hit that like button and give us a follow on Twitter at Playing the Tips Pod. Hit the subscribe button for the Playing the Tips podcast. You can find us on Stitcher, Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. Don't forget to download the episode and give us a review. Those downloads are really what counts, and the rankings and all that good stuff, shenanigans that they use to sort podcasts. Again, thank you. We appreciate you guys listening. And hopefully we'll continue to give you some great new content week in and week out.
Tournament preview for the Thursday Charlie Hoffman Texas Open. This is a 100-year-old staple on the PGA Tour in the Texas Hill Country. We are at the Oaks course at TPC San Antonio. 144 players in the field this week. Top 65 and ties are going to be on to the weekend. This is, Shallow Cal, the final chance to qualify for the Masters. Last shot at that golden ticket. Eight of the last 10 winners of this event had not yet qualified. Big chance we add to that list this year. Only eight players currently in the field who have qualified. Some pretty big storylines out there as well. Most notably, Ricky Fowler looking to punch that ticket.
I have a feeling that a few of those players who have qualified, Hideki, Tyrrell, will be withdrawing before the start of the tournament. Just a hunch.
Wouldn't surprise me at all. Hideki actually withdrew from this tournament last year with the exact same neck injury, if that tells you how things are going.
Has he even been healthy in the last year? Man, he just seems like, oof.
I mean, has he been healthy since the win 2 years ago at Augusta? I know that he got the win in Japan at Zozo, but, I mean, was he even really fully healthy then?
I don't know. He was healthy enough to take down Russ Henley. That's all I know.
Yeah, he sure was.
Shit.
All right. By way of previous winners here, JJ Spahn last year, 2022, over 200-1 in most places. Really kind of fits the mold of what has been more often than not at this tournament with the long shots coming through. 2021 was Jordan Spieth, who got it to 18-under. 2019, the Monday qualifier, Corey Connors at 20-under. 2018, Andrew Landry was 200-1 as well at minus 17. Then Kevin Chappell before that at minus 12. Thursday, Charlie Hoffman, a past winner here at minus 12. And then a name from the past, also a winner here. Do you remember Ben Curtis?
Yeah.
Won this tournament in 2012. Most famous, of course, for coming completely out of nowhere and winning the Open Championship. My sister, when we were pretty, when he won the Open Championship, we were a good bit younger, my sister in particular, and she just loved Ben Curtis for whatever reason, just completely out of nowhere. He wins. She jumped on the bandwagon, followed his career for several years after that. And you know what? He had a decent little cup of coffee on the PGA Tour after that breakthrough win.
I mean, any cup of coffee is a good cup of coffee on the PGA Tour. Let's be honest.
Man, isn't that the truth? All right, Shallow Cal, hit us with some course vitals.
Am I allowed to say who designed the course? I still can't believe we're playing here again.
In hushed tones.
Greg Norman the Shark. Rawr.
And with whom else?
Whom else? Sergio. Yes.
Sergio. The chief consultant. And chief lackey to Greg Norman, honestly.
Did Sergio marry Norman's daughter and then was like banging other girls and they got divorced or something like that?
I haven't heard that story, but honestly, it wouldn't surprise me in the slightest.
Yeah. They either married or they were engaged, and it didn't. I don't remember exactly what happened, but it did not end well. Let's just say that. So,
apparently it didn't fray the relationship between the shark and Sergio too much, because they obviously designed this course together. And then still, you know, with Sergio playing on Liv and really being one of Norman's first and most true lackeys, obviously whatever happened didn't hurt too many feelings.
That $100 million changes a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So real quick, overview here. This is not your typical TPC course. It's kind of a pretty straight course. It's not your Pete Dye, tons of water, dog legs, frills. One thing that this course has that all the TPC courses have is that it is in immaculate shape. Constantly. TPC San Antonio, specifically the Oaks course, is just absolutely pristine. It's carved out of the side of like the hills there in San Antonio. So, but when you think of that, you know, you think of Austin and you think of the elevation change, but there's not really any elevation change like you saw last week with Austin here. There's less than 100 feet elevation change total in the entire course. So that's weird, for saying, you know, this course is carved out of the side of a limestone hill, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Rocky Texas landscape.
Rocky Texas landscape, which, you know, you really don't see much, at TPC courses. Nice testy track here though. Off the tee, definitely a challenge. Tight fairways, penal rough. There are some fairways that are a bit wider. And with those fairways, you really need to attack. And that's where your longer drivers will get a bit of advantage. But who really will have the advantage off the tee here are those guys that are just pounding fairways. If you can just put the ball 295, 300 yards, you know, forget about the 340. If you can just pound fairways here, you're good, because if you get wayward, the rough is penal, which is a Bermuda and rye fescue mix. They grew it out to be about, I've seen around 3 inches this year, as opposed to previous years. And then you've got bunkers galore off of fairways. You've got trees. You've got limestone and all sorts of hazards that are awaiting you if you miss. Green's pretty average size here, about 6,400 square feet. You're gonna be, again, the Bermuda grass overseeded with poa. Again, we're a week further out on the warmer weather. We're a little bit more south, a little bit closer to the ocean. So it's going to be a little bit warmer. That Bermuda has pretty much completely overtaken the poa, so I wouldn't put too much emphasis on that. Very undulated greens here. Tough test. Some of the toughest on tour to hit, which is, it's crazy because they're not super fast. They're a little bit slower, but you still have that big undulation, your shaved runoffs, a lot of balls bouncing off into collection areas. So it's really another week of great approach play. The par fives here, some of the toughest on tour, and winning is going to require great playing on these par fives, as four of the last 9 winners, I believe, led the field in par five scoring. So you really need to make hay on these par fives. Even though they are tough, they are some of your own, your biggest scoring opportunities, along with that drivable par four, which I believe is 16 or 17 this week. I think it's 17. Yeah. The real question here, as always in Texas, what kind of weather are you going to get, especially in Houston, San Antonio? I don't know why I get those two cities confused. Probably because it's Texas and it's not the most important state in the world, but
and not all that far from each other, a couple hours drive or so.
Yeah, but it, like Texas, that wind. You know, you saw it kick up in Austin a little bit, but this one here, you get that north-south wind blowing, and you can really make some of these longer, over 600-yard par fives even more brutal than they already are. Ty, tell me that we're not going to have a bunch of wind and we're going to have a bogey fest.
I mean, Thursday and Friday going to be pretty windy, but it does lay down for the weekend.
All right. All right. Good deal. Forced carries in the fairway, again, and being accurate, is really going to be, your big challenge here. Bunkers galore, only three water hazards. So not to worry there. So we'll see how San Antone plays this year.
Little bit more on the greens. As you mentioned, the further we get into spring, you know, late March, certainly as we turn the corner into April, you're going to see a lot less and less of the overseed with the POA that we've seen on many of these courses on the green complexes here in recent weeks. Certainly the case this week in Texas, but one key difference, this is champion Bermuda grass this week, as opposed to a lot of the Tiff Eagle that we've seen recently, combined with the POA overseed. Going to have a little bit more thatch to it than your traditional Tiff Eagle Bermuda.
Excuse me, what was that word?
Thatch. Uh-huh. This is your agronomy 101 lesson.
Yes.
So it is going to be a bit different, you know, visually, honestly, for what the players have seen again with the Tiff Eagle combined with the POA overseed here at a few of the courses recently. Going to be a little bit stickier. The reeds are going to not quite be as true as what we've seen with that Tiff Eagle. Not a huge difference, but there is subtle nuance in the champion versus the Tiff Eagle. Slow greens, 11 or under on the stimp, very likely. If the course is not dry and firm, then they are some of the slower greens that we see kind of on this swing. They are some of the hardest to hit on tour as well. You got a lot of shaved runoffs, put a lot of balls down the collection area if you are missing greens here. Comp courses, I'll just throw out a couple Greg Norman courses that we see regularly on the tours. El Camaleon for the Mayakoba Classic. Last time we will have seen it this past fall on the PGA Tour because it is a Greg Norman course. Also, the Earth Course at Jumeirah Golf Estates in Dubai, UAE. This has been home to the European Tour Championship since 2009. Quite technical in nature, much like you see here at TPC San Antonio. So both could be pretty decent guides as you're looking for comp courses this week. Stats to consider for you, Shallow Cal.
Oh, strokes gained off the tee. That is a big one here on this course. Strokes gained approach, as always. And then I am going to go with opportunities gained. I think that on these par fives, if you give yourself a chance to score, you can be very successful, and you will need to score on these on those par fives. So opportunities gained as well.
Yeah, I'm right there with you on the approach play. Before JJ Spahn kind of broke the mold last year, the previous four winners all were top four in strokes gained approach for the week. Two of them led the field. Again, not quite as good for JJ Spahn last year, but certainly some pretty decent approach play out of him as well. Ball striking for me, this is a pure ball strikers course. And then, of course, this stat does combine two of the most important stats here as well. Strokes gained off the tee, as you mentioned, and greens and regulation. Bombers have an advantage, but you got to be accurate too because of the lightly tree-lined fairways, but more so what you talked a little bit about in the course vitals and that breakdown. Trouble lurking everywhere with that rocky terrain if you're a bit wayward.
That's the words that I was looking for. I didn't want to call it desert because it's like limestone and all sorts of shit, but rocky terrain, that's why you were an English major, Ty.
It's your typical Texas hill country horse shit. And then greens and regulation for me as well. As mentioned, this is one of the most difficult courses on tour to hit greens and regulation. I really think it's going to be a big benefit to guys that can do it, not have to scramble from around the greens. Some of those collection areas really do get tough, very tightly, closely mowed down there. All right, Shallow Cal, we talked a little bit of weather already. Can definitely expect some Texas wind. As mentioned, Thursday and Friday are going to be the real problem child, it looks like. Pretty steady winds, 15 to 20. You're going to gust over 30 miles an hour both days. It does get considerably calmer on the weekend. Really lays down both Saturday and Sunday with not really even any wind in the way of major gusts. But again, take all of this with a grain of salt. We are recording this show on Monday evening. Plus, Windfinder has not exactly been the most favorable predictor for the splits here the last couple weeks. But if you are interested, San Antonio International Airport is the location I'm using on Windfinder for this forecast. Anything else to be aware of, concerned of, by way of weather on your end, Shallow Cal?
No. I just hope that it's not a total shit show on Thursday. And actually, you know what? I wouldn't mind seeing a total shit show. So maybe give one of my T-Max tickets a longer shot winner here.
This tournament has definitely been subject to some draw bias in past years because of the ridiculous Texas wind and how it can blow in the hill country. So it's not completely out of the question that we see something just completely crazy Thursday and or Friday.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's talk about a few of those long shot tickets, get into tips, picks, best bets, break down our full cards for the Thursday Charlie Hoffman Texas Open. Shallow Cal, we went in a bit of divergent directions this week, at least at the top of the card. For the first time in calendar year 2023, no opportunities for a team win. But given how things have gone for the first, 11, 12 weeks of the calendar year, maybe it's not all bad that we don't overlap on any golfers this week.
Man, it's a buckshot here. Buckshot time, baby.
Yeah, time to change it up a little bit, do something different. So you've got five selections.
I'm not even going to give reasons for my players. I'm just going to let you know. I got to change something up here. Change the mojo, baby. Change the mojo.
Get it going in a different direction. Time to get this moving. Get the train back on the tracks. Five picks for you, five picks for me. You're a bit heavier at the top of the odds boards on your card than I am.
I got one guy below 30 to 1. A bit heavier. Come on, man.
I don't start my card until 45 to 1 this week. Give me a break. Don't start it until the 40s.
One player heavy.
All right, well, let's start at your very heavy top of the odds board with Corey Connors, 18 to 1. Short number on a past champion and a Monday qualifier here at the Valero Texas Open. Already in for the Masters, but you like the good vibes and the mojo on Corey Connors, the Canadian, here again this week.
All right, I will tell you why I like Corey Connors here at 18 to 1. The last time I won a bet here, it was in the teens. So I had to have one player in the teens. There were two players in the teens that I were really was really eyeing. Corey just happens to be the prototypical type of golfer that you want for this course. He is incredibly accurate off the tee. He is not short by any means. He is going to pump that ball down there in the fairway and not shoot 16 on a hole, thankfully, or hopefully. He is not the greatest putter in the world. In fact, he's a pretty terrible putter, actually. So that gives me a little bit of concern. However, with the amount of trouble that hopefully everybody else in the field except for him will have getting to the green, the trouble that Corey has on the greens will be mitigated. The ball striker of all ball strikers in this field, Corey Connors, 18 to 1.
If I'm not mistaken, what did JJ Spahn win this tournament at last year? Do you recall?
No, I think I turned it off.
I got it right here, minus 13. Yeah. So
after Spieth was out.
Yeah, seriously. So since we have been back at, or since we have been at the Oaks course, TPC San Antonio, Corey Connors is actually the record holder at 20 under par for his victory in 2019. I don't think we're going to see that those scores get to 20 under again this week. I think we're more looking at kind of what we saw last year, that 13, 14, 15, 16 under range. I think that's actually better suited to Corey Connors' game than a birdie fest. I think 20 under was a pretty big outlier for him in terms of the way that he was going to get his first into the state, only went on tour. So I think you're in a better shape if it's a lower score, excuse me, a higher scoring affair for your boy Corey Connors, and people are making 16s out there.
It's like the Will Zalatoris syndrome. You know, Zalatoris is great when winning scores are going to be 5, 8, 5, 6, 7, 8 under par, right, for the tournament.
Yep.
Zal can't get to 30 under par, 28 under par, because he can't putt for shit. Same with Corey Connors. So light it up with those irons, light it up with that driver, hit those fairways, and see what happens.
All right, we're going to stick with you for the next selection. You're only European on the card. I'm a little bit surprised at this course, this tournament, with some of the players that were playing and the numbers that were available on them, that you're only selection outside of the continental United States, Alex Noren, 33-1.
You know, I really like Alex Noren, and I think that he's been kind of, you know, when you say hit or miss, he's been a lot more miss recently. You haven't seen him really at the top of leaderboards. However, I think that gives him a little bit more, I don't believe he's qualified for the Masters already. This gives him a little bit of extra juice to play for. So Alex Noren, 33-1.
Alex Noren, 33-1, the match play specialist. He is qualified for the Masters by way of a 49th place ranking in the official world golf rankings as of last week. Top 50 make it.
Talk about squeezing your way in there, baby.
Squeezing in. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. I am looking at the wrong category. He's actually better than I was giving him credit for. He's actually 42nd in the official world golf rankings.
You better put some respect on that name, Ty.
33-1 on Alex Noren. It is hard for me to do, let me say that. So I loved a lot of European names, and I am only halfway kidding there. I did heavily consider Alex Noren. The number is kind of what threw me off there, but I do like his game for this course very, very much. I loved a ton of Euros in the range of really like that 40 to 50, 60 to 1. As mentioned, I considered Alex Noren. You got Matt Wallace in that range, Nikolai Højgaard, Thomas Dietrich, Aaron Rye.
I almost went with Nikolai. I know that, we love our Euro guys, but he is one of, I think, both of our favorites.
Yeah, like him a lot. I actually got a great Højgaard Twins memorabilia golf card numbered out of 25. Got a little polo swatch from each of them. Definitely one of my favorites. I like Nikolai Højgaard right now a lot more on a course like last week, resort, perfect weather, you know, a little bit of wind. He's going to get there. He's going to develop that part of his game. I didn't like it as much this week, but definitely a name that I considered in that range. My first selection, and a guy that honestly I thought I might see show up on your card, I'm going 1 point each way on Ryan Fox at 45-1. Nothing for you on the Foxy this week?
I did, but you know, he's the same age as us. His gut is the same size as mine.
It's impressive.
And he drives the ball further than I do, and it really pisses me off. I love Ryan Fox. I would totally drink a beer and play golf with him, and I thought about him as well. I just didn't think he played that great last week in Austin. And so I was kind of fading him again this past week, or this week coming up here.
Definitely disappointing at match play last week. I think we actually both were on him to come out of that pod in advance. Almost did it. Got one win over there, but not enough in the long run. It's a wild ride every time that you're on with Ryan Fox. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. The shitty part was is that you don't really get to see, you know, when Ryan Fox is playing, he's not a name that a lot of mainstream American American golf fans would be like, oh, Ryan Fox. Yeah, I want to see shots from him. So you don't get coverage on his matches. So that kind of sucks.
Yeah, drops in for a few of the tournaments here and there. Obviously, last week being an elevated event that he was qualified for, wasn't going to pass that one up, but does make his home primarily on the European Tour. Can't believe, honestly, that I waited until the 40s to start my card and still wound up with a selection with so much volatility built in like a Ryan Fox. But I guess it is better than going Siwoo at 22-1 because I thought about that too. Both of those guys, no stranger to a good blow up. Ryan Fox, particularly on the back nine when leading or in contention, I am well aware of that. But he does have some win equity in that 36-year-old body of his, as you mentioned. 14 professional wins, three of them have come at the highest level of golf, albeit overseas on the European Tour. Last win was in October at the Alfred Dunhill Links. He also lost a playoff to Victor Perez at the Dutch Open last year. Does have a bit of desert form with a win at Ras Al Khaimah. Really solid player overall, as mentioned. He's 36th currently in the official world golf rankings. He does have a ticket to Augusta next week as a top 50. Three of his four starts on the Euro Tour been top 20, so he's got a little bit of form coming in as well, despite the disappointment at match play last week. Bombs the ball off the tee, as you mentioned. Led Euro Tour in driving distance as a rookie in 2017 and again in 2018. Then all he did was, you know, finish second in 2019, third in 2020, 10th last season. Really a prodigious driver of the golf ball, which I think is going to help him here. Hits a lot of greens too. Finished top 40 in GIR five times in the Euro Tour as a professional. And as a New Zealander, of course, he plays his best in the wind and the most difficult conditions. 45-1 for me on Ryan Fox.
Austria, let's throw another shrimp on the Barbie.
I'm going to stick on my card because I got one more before we get into the 60s. Another guy that actually I say this, I'm really not that surprised that you aren't on him because this is definitely more my guy than it has been yours in our previous betting card.
This is fully your guy. Don't say it's more your guy. It's fully your guy.
Fully my losing bets every week. Been a while since I've been on him, but I am back on the Aaron Rye train. 1 point each way, 50-1. To be perfectly honest, didn't love that number. I think when I sent you the text on Sunday afternoon or Sunday evening when I was playing Guess the Odds, I had him pegged closer at 66-1. And actually, I did see people get tickets as high as 70-1 on him. I wanted the each way, so I couldn't grab any of those nice, big, juicy numbers. But I did get 50-1 and a fifth payout all the way to six places on Aaron Rye. Back to Pepper and Greens again. He is third in this field, his last 12 hitting greens in regulation. Approach play really improved after a rough stretch. Prior to the Players and API, he had lost strokes on approach six of his last eight, but gained in each of those last two, including 5.1 strokes on approach at Bay Hill. So I love to see that form heading to Texas. Tee to green game, been really solid. He's gained in five straight, nine of his last 10. This is one of those tighter, you know, more tree-lined Parklands, you know, technical course that should really fit his game coming over from playing primarily on the European Tour, a lot of what he saw for the first part of his career over there. Excellent form, both at El Camaleon, as mentioned, a Greg Norman-designed course at Mayakoba, and in Texas. 15th at Mayakoba in 2021, 7th at the Houston Open last fall, 19th at Houston Open if you go back to 2021, and then he was 29th here last year. Also, for good measure, made 6 of 8 cuts to start in 2023, like how Aaron Rye's game is rounding into form here. All right, We are going to dip into the 60s then, both with a couple plays here. I'm going to turn it back over to you, Shallow Cal, for your 66-1.
All righty then. That is going to be Patrick Rogers. He is eighth in the field in strokes gained total his last 50 rounds. He is also someone who came off of a really crappy first round last week in Corrales and played well through the weekend. So hopefully that trend upward will lead him to a high finish this week. 66-1, Patrick Rogers. Let's go, buddy. Not a terribly great approach player. Good with his short game. He's good off the tee. He's not great anywhere, but in this field, good is going to get it done, I think, because you don't really have too many great players in the field.
Patrick Rogers, 66-1. Is he a guy you bet often? I actually don't know the answer to that. Is he one that shows up on your card fairly regularly or no?
This is the very first time that Rogers, yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I've had a dabble here or there in the past. He will definitely show in a model or two when it's his time.
Yeah, he does. And he's been a fantasy play of mine every now and then as a low-owned kind of play. So, yeah, Patrick Rogers.
Well, I got a 66-1 as well. I went a bit different direction. And again, I've actually seen people with much higher numbers on this player. Certainly would have been interested in anything at or approaching the triple digits, but I was looking for that each way ticket. So I'm 1 point on Alex Smalley at 66-1, out to six places. The Duke product, really a prototypical golfer for what I want here at this course. Missed cut last year on debut, but the way that his game sets up, this really should be a course that he likes. Great tee to green game, really solid ball striker, peppers greens. Seventh in my model this week for his last 24 rounds, and during that stretch, fifth in strokes gained tee to green in this field, seventh in ball striking, seventh in greens in regulation. So again, kind of what's been the hallmark of his young career since turning pro in 2019 has really shown through these last 24 rounds or so. And so I like how he's rounded into form specifically for this tournament. Only once in his last 10 events has he lost strokes tee to green. So big indicator there for me. The problem, of course, always has been, always likely will be with Alex Smalley. Terrible putter. But we have seen Corey Connors win at the Valero Texas Open, so I do have faith. Alex Smalley lost a ridiculous 7.5 strokes putting at the Players a couple weeks ago. 7.5 strokes on the green.
What?
I mean, you just play to, like, the baseline, and you're nearly 8 strokes better on the field.
Did he make the cut?
No, he did not make the cut at the Players, which so was
losing 7.5 strokes.
I'm sorry. He did make the cut. And you know what? I'm sorry. I've got this all backwards. Lost 7.5 strokes putting the week before at Arnold Palmer did miss the cut.
Got it.
Rebounded to lose just 2.5 strokes the next week at the Players, where he finished T65.
Okay. I was going to say, that is impressive if you lose 7.5 strokes in only 2 days.
My God. Well, I mean, that's what he did. That's what he did at Bay Hill.
That's incredible.
Oh, there has been a little bit of improvement here lately. His last time out, he lost just 0.5 stroke on the greens at Valspar. But he's really, again, going to need to be carried by the rest of his game. He is a good around-the-green player as well. I know he said he's great at GIR. He hits a bunch of greens. But when that occasional miss does happen, he's really good getting up and down. Very important here because of those shaved runoffs, a lot of the collection areas that just collect those golf balls. Gaining nearly 0.5 stroke around the greens his last 10. He's 2 for 2 with a couple top 25s at the Amex. Does have a little bit of a correlation here to Texas. I'll get into that with my next selection, but I do like form out at the Amex in California. Good number, not a great number. Talented player in a field where I think he can compete. Give me a ticket on Alex Smalley, 66-1. All right, now we start getting into the long shots. We both dabble in the triple digits, but you've got one before that. A very familiar name around these parts. Why Ryan Palmer, 90-1?
Ryan Palmer. I bet him here, I think it was 2 years ago. And Ryan hasn't been the best player lately. And I think that certainly shows with his strokes gained data. But there was a reason that he was a betting favorite here a couple years ago. And I want to say that you might have been on him as well that week. So
it's very possible, actually. It sounds familiar.
So seeing Ryan Palmer at 90-1 in this field really kind of piqued my interest. And that's why I'm going with Ryan Palmer, 90-1.
A little each way ticket on as well. I don't hate that. Certainly yes. A great track record around the Valero. Not quite a Thursday Charlie Hoffman track record, but yeah, he does have 3 top 6 finishes. They actually all came in succession, starting back in 2015, 16, 17. He went 6-4-6. So definitely knows his way around this track a little bit.
Yes, sir.
All right, well, we'll move into the triple digits then. I've got a couple at 125-1. You've got one at 100-1, so we'll stick with you.
I'm really disappointed that you're not with me on this one.
And I thought long and hard about it. Long and hard about it.
Yeah. Can we agree that he's a ball striker?
Yeah.
Yeah, iron player for sure. Pounds, greens. Really just got to stay away from the blow-ups, right?
With most young players, is he
21 or 22 now?
Yeah, so, he can drink. I know that, but not by much.
He's a young boy, and his girlfriend's smoking hot. If she's on the bag this week, we're definitely winning this one.
Well, she better be on the bag this week. I mean, wasn't it Texas Open week last year where this all kind of came to be, and she showed up on the bag for the first or second time, and that's when, the young love was kind of blossoming?
I don't know. I don't know when it was, but I was like, damn, I need to be a professional golfer. Anyways, Akshay Bhatia, the young lefty, he really he had an okay Friday in Corrales, I would say, with a nice little 9-under round there. So this guy
with multiple bogeys.
Yeah, like what? This guy can hammer greens. He can hammer the ball which, you know, on a course that we prefaced with the Kevin Na 16 on, just avoid the big blow up, my man. And you have all the tools to be great here. I would really love to see his putting kind of come around and match his ball striking, but I think with the greens here being a little bit slower, maybe giving him a little bit better feel and not super fast like we've had, you know, the past month or two on tour. His time on the PGA Tour is coming, and he's not Tom Kim with 2 wins under 20, but he's a damn fine player.
Certainly a measure of validation for the path that he's taken to be a professional golfer by getting special temporary membership status just a few weeks ago on the PGA Tour. Atypical route, again, to where he's gotten to. Didn't attend college, done a lot of Monday qualifiers, gone overseas, played some different tours, etc., to make his way here. So certainly, again, a lot of validation for Akshay Bhatia, who he is as a golfer, what he's still going to do. I love this guy. I think he's going to win boatloads on tour. At 100-1, I was very interested. I will say that. Same reason I wasn't on him a couple weeks ago at Valspar. I feel like he's much better suited for a birdie fest somewhere in the islands, like we saw last week at Corrales. I was very upset when he went on that ridiculous run with the 9-under and thinking that it was going to be Akshay week and I was going to miss it because the number was too short last week at 40s, 50s-1. So I couldn't get behind it all the way this week. I'm a big narrative guy, as you know, and it was here at the Texas Open last year where either he slid into the DMs or homegirl slid into his DMs, but sparks were flying.
Oh, she slid into his DMs. She slid into his DMs for sure.
That's exactly right, and wound up on the bag a week later. So I like that story. And again, combined with triple digits, I thought long and hard about Akshay. Not the week for me. I'm going to be on him many more times, probably lose a bunch more money on him before that breakthrough win comes. But I didn't hate the number at 100-1. I think that's an interesting each-way play with Narrative Street in play. All right, well, I got a couple triple digits as well to round us out here. I'll start with 1 point each way on Erik van Rooyen, 125-1. I like EVR for a few reasons, but this is primarily a numbers play. He was generally 35-1 a week or so ago at Corrales. Granted, worse field, but not astronomically so. Fucked around all weekend and wound up T56 after flashing a little bit on Thursday and even a little bit during Friday's round. But now we get 125-1, and I actually dawdled on the 150s this morning when I was trying to make up my mind on the very last play on the card. So I did wind up missing those. But to me, there is just no way that you can price him at 35-1 a week ago at Corrales, even in that field, and then turn around and put, you know, mid triple digits on him. So I see a lot of value in this number at EVR. He is a streaky golfer in a lot of ways, but he actually tends to bounce back from poor performances pretty well. Good at Valspar 2 weeks ago, finished 10th, drove the ball really well. He was nails with his irons in Florida, 7.1 strokes gained on approach. So I do like that strong iron play here. Strong showing at the Amex in January. I mentioned that there's a little bit of a correlation between PGA West and here at TPC San Antonio. Andrew Landry has two career PGA Tour wins. One came here, Texas Open, 200-1. Also a past winner of the Amex. Both require strong driving of the ball, premium on approach play. EVR was 14th here in San Antonio on debut in 2021, so I do see a little bit of a correlation there that I like. South African, very good in the wind, gains nearly a full stroke on the field for his career in the windiest conditions. Looking for that second career PGA Tour win, first in a full field event after winning the Barracuda in 2021 at one of my favorite courses in Tahoe. Let's go, EVR. Okay, last one for me then. I'm sticking in the same range. I'm going out on a limb a little bit here, but if you're asking me who my favorite play of the week is, Kazuki Higa at 125-1. Not Higo, whom I also thought about. Kazuki Higa.
if you just take Higo's strategy, man, you can hit it as far out of bounds as you want. You get a little bounce off some of that limestone rock and right back into the fairway, baby.
I'm surprised I didn't see Garrick Higo on your card this week, particularly at some of those numbers.
I'll let you finish your Higa, and then I'm going to ask you real quick, why not on two different players?
All right. Well, on Higa, he will be in the Masters next week, actually. He qualified by way of winning the Dunlop Phoenix Open back in November. That is the big-time event on the Japanese tour. He's a Japanese star in the making. 81st in the official world golf rankings, as mentioned, is already qualified for Augusta next week by way of that win back in November, so doesn't need the world golf ranking or a win this week. He's played a little bit all over the place for his career, primarily on the Japanese tour, but he's also played some European tour events, some Asian tour events. Won 6 times on the Japanese tour, 4 times in 2022 alone. Also the leading money winner for last season. as mentioned, got his ticket to Augusta by winning the Dunlop Phoenix. That is the crown jewel of the Japanese Tour. Also got him status on Euro Tour in 2023. So a lot going the right direction here. Beat Mito Pereira by 3 strokes in that Dunlop Phoenix.
Can't say his name either.
Yep, can't say his name around these parts. Actually, I just saw, though, I didn't read the full article, but I started reading how CBS is going to address coverage of LIV players at Augusta in 2 weeks, and it sounds like they're not going to hide from it. They're going to lean right into that piece.
Good.
Kazuki Higa also has beaten Rakuya Hoshina as a runner-up twice. Not a bad player over in Japan in his own right. Has 7 career professional wins. We've each been on him a time or two as well in the States. We tend to see Asian players, particularly those from Korea and Japan, play well on tight tree-lined courses. Really classic tests of golf, similar to what many of these players grew up playing on. Lastly, I just like the progressive form on Higa here. In 5 starts in calendar year 2023, he's gone T72 at the Sony Open stateside on the PGA Tour. Chased that with a T36 at Ras Al Khaimah, European Tour, a little desert form. T13 in the International Series in Oman on the Asian Tour. T11 Thailand Open on the Asian Tour. And then T4 in his last event to date at the end of February, which came again on the European Tour at the Hero Indian Open. So I like where his game's going. Got a lot to be excited about. Play for next week, obviously, at Augusta. I think he rides a little bit of that momentum coming in. 125-1, 1 point each way on Kazuki Higa. All right, Shallow Cow, who are you fretting and worrying about that you're not on this week?
FOMO. I got two guys for you. One is close to the top, and one is close to the bottom, and then in the triple digits. Number one up at the top, Taylor Montgomery. Why not Taylor this week?
Yep. So, like Taylor a lot. Absolutely love that putter here.
Last 50 rounds in this field, 11th strokes gained off the tee, 2nd short game. Terrible on approach, though.
Terrible. Always been the problem since he's broken onto the scene, those irons.
But putting and off the tee, very, very good. Very good.
Very good. Very good. And I'll say this. If you like Taylor Montgomery this week, I would go ahead and grab those 25s. I don't think they're going to last if we get one or both withdrawals that you're anticipating, particularly Tyrrell Hatton up at the top of the board. He gets out of here. We're going to see Taylor Montgomery like 16-18-1.
Taylor Montgomery was number one in my – or not Taylor Montgomery. Tyrrell was number one in my model, but – Taylor was very close, and I just can't get past that 135th in the field and approach last 50 rounds. That is bad.
Yeah, that and just the 25-1 number, too rich for my blood. Again, if you like him and you think this is the week, I'd go ahead and grab it quick because I do anticipate with a withdrawal or two that number is going to fall below 20.
All right, here's my next one. This guy is triple digits, and I am going to give you a couple of strokes gained standings numbers in the field the last 50 rounds. 10th strokes gained tee to green, 19th strokes gained total, 4th strokes gained ball striking, 2nd strokes gained off the tee, and 95th. Strokes gained putting.
So I know who this is because I looked at very similar stats. And it's kind of mind-blowing where we are with his short game after what we saw as recently as like 18 months, certainly 24 months ago or so. I can't believe how poorly Garrick Higo is putting the ball right now.
This is Hayden Buckley.
Oh, Hayden Buck. Okay.
Yes.
I might not have been looking at 50 rounds. I might have been looking at something a bit shorter, 24 or so for those Higo numbers.
But Garrick Higo, same odds, same thing. Terrible putter, but great. Anyways, Hayden Buckley with those numbers at 125-1. But I just can't get past that putting number, and I can't get past the the around the green and short game play for
So that's for Higo or for Buckley?
Buckley.
Buckley, yeah. So that's the biggest thing for me, even more so than the putter, is his around the green game. I worry if he's missing greens here in the wind that it's going to be a real struggle getting up and down for the Tupelo Mississippi boy. You know, it's a similar case to be made for Alex Smalley. Honestly, he does a lot of the same things similarly well to Smalley. You're obviously getting a lot better value on that number. Both players, you got to have faith that they're going to find some semblance of a putter this week. And that's a big ask. But as we know, putting is very variable on the PGA Tour. And it just takes one hot week to match up with all those other strong stats that you rattled off. I tell you what, I give a live chance to both of them.
Yeah, Higo is actually 101 in putting the last 50 rounds strokes gained.
Yes, I knew he was right there.
You know what's crazy? If I gave you two players, strokes gained putting, and I said Gerrit Higo and Emiliano Grillo, who would you take as the better putter?
God. I mean, think about when he was winning two times in 3 weeks in the Canary Islands. I mean, everything that he looked at inside of 20 feet was in the middle of the cup.
And then he came over to the PGA Tour. Was it his first PGA Tour event? Second? Third?
Yeah, it wasn't many.
It wasn't many. And he won. He won the fucking thing. And now he can't. I guess he had a solo third last fall that we cashed in a nice each way at. But man, oh man, that putter.
Ball. It's been bad. It's been bad. The rest of the game is rounding into form. I do think I was looking at a little bit shorter frame there. Maybe, like I said, last 12 or 24 rounds, something like that. But the numbers are good on Gerrit Higo for the most part throughout the rest of the bag. That putter has just been terrible, and it's so shocking because he, for his career, is not a bad putter and has been a fairly decent putter for long stretches over in Europe.
Yeah, definitely.
It's coming. It's coming. This was not the time for me to fire that bullet again on Gerrit Higo, but he will be back on my card soon. I see a lot of things I like in that form. All right, well, that's going to wrap it. A reminder, you can see all of our picks for the Thursday Charlie Hoffman Texas Open by following at PlayingTipsPod on Twitter. No chance for a team win this week, Shallow Cow, but one of us is going to hit something.
God, I fucking hope so.